Studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
Monday starting out once again to be another Monday, and it's going to probably be another Monday until the Monday comes up and it's the end of midnight. Hi, Cliff. How you doing?
What? What was that all about? I'm happy with Monday until, well, not until next Monday. I mean, you know, 24 hours of it will be just fine.
The way things are starting out, what I'm referring to, folks, is that on these programs, there's a 15 minutes before the program, it gives a countdown and a verbal countdown. And it also shows on our screen how many minutes before the show. And we're like about 4 minutes apart from each other.
Really? That's interesting, because I would assume that they would be working from the same clock since they're the same company. Maybe, I don't know, maybe the little lady, the British lady who talks to you, is a recording or something, and she got out of sync or something. She's not live.
Yeah, maybe she's outsourced, you know.
Okay. 3 minutes,
your program.
Oh, I tell you. You know, I'm amazed that the things, because, you know, like we're doing this sort of thing, we're doing this sort of, I don't know, small bit, but these networks that are doing these big programs, like they've got the network programs that are, they're doing right now they're doing the Republican National Convention, and they've got people all over the country that are giving you information, and now they've got the Storm Isaac that they've got to follow. They got reporters everywhere, and yet it looks pretty good. Sometimes they get messed up, but the thing that upsets me the most is when one person stops talking and the delay is so long that it's a pregnant pause in there before the other person starts talking. And they don't think it's there because it's just the delay in the system, but it's very interesting to watch some of these people do their thing. And I don't know how to fix that, because you can put delays in there, but they're still there, regardless of whether you hide them or not. They're still there. Oh, well. At least we don't have quite so bad a delay. I knew it. I knew it. Okay.
See, that what you do is you get rid of the commentaries or the commentators, and you hire psychics. That way you don't need to rely on it, because you know what they're going to say before they say it.
Yeah. But then if we could do that, and if we could project that out, we wouldn't need to do the show at all. We just send it out to people.
Yeah. Good morning. Okay, we're done. Have a good day. Thanks for calling.
You know, so that's the thing. Computers can do that. You know, you can rip a song off of a disc in just a matter of seconds, or you can make another disc of it in a matter of seconds, or you can transfer it from one file to another. It would be interesting to do that sort of thing with this. You know, actually, you can. People can do that. They can go to the archives and download the archives and get the thing, but they still have to listen to it to hear it.
We hear a KRBN Internet News Talk Radio do not encourage people to steal other people's property.
What? We're not. I wasn't suggesting that they steal other people's property. I am suggesting that they steal our property. I mean, that's what I want to do, is get our show to them quickly. You know, if we could, got to figure out how to wire direct to the human brain so that we can download our show to the brain. That's how we're going to do it.
Mass confusion. But speaking of downloading to the show, how about people uploading their phone number and putting it in their dialer so they can quickly call the 646-721-9887 number. The chat room is open, too, if you'd like to join us there. If you are listening to us on the archives, you can send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. And we got a lot to talk about today. Like Cliff mentioned earlier about the storm, Isaac, a little bit about Apple, wildfires, a bunch of political stuff. But first, I want to get into cookies.
Meow.
I'm just
good dog, Skippy. Yes, Skippy is a very good dog, and I always enjoy working with him and like to reward him for a great performance. However, I am always hesitant and very selective in the types of treats that I will give him because I worry about his health and only want to give him something that's really good for him. That's why I always reward him with Dancing Dog cookies, because they are handmade to order from all natural ingredients and preservative-free. Plus, they come in a wide variety of styles and flavors. Skippy loves them, and I'm sure you will too, so check them out at www.dancingdogcookies.com.
Dancing Dog cookies available in select markets in the Lane County area or online at www.dancingdogcookies.com.
I want to know who selected the markets.
Probably, you know, when Tom went out and went, hey, you want to sell my cookies?
That's about the way you select things like that.
Yeah.
Please sell my cookies. Ah, I selected another market.
But yeah, you know, check them out, folks. They're really kind of cool. And, you know, they put together nice little shapes and whatever. They really do a good job, and the dogs like them too, as well as Cliff.
Well, what's more, they're good for the dogs. I mean, they're made so that they're healthy. I mean, you know, I wonder sometimes what some of these dog foods are made of. But this one, you know, everything in it is legitimately good for the dog. I wonder if things that are for the dog are the same as what's good for people or not. That's true.
I mean, it's like the old joke about the lemon pies, you know, made with artificial lemon, but yeah, you wander down to the other side of the store and get something like Lemon Pledge, which is made with real lemon. You know, they put the good stuff in the furniture polish.
That's true. Made with real lemon. Yep. You can suck up some pledge.
That's right. Why are you lapping on the table? Never mind.
Unfortunately, we don't want to say that because teenagers today are probably sucking up pledge and getting high on it. And it's, I mean, they're sucking everything else and getting high on it, so why not? Jeez. I can't believe it.
Well, there's too many things. Now you got to show your ID. Some places to buy a can of spray paint, you have to show ID. When I was growing up, to get model airplane glue, you had to be over 21.
It wasn't. I obviously grew up a little before you or something, because I got my model airplane glue with no trouble at all. But I tell you, it's they're sucking on anything. I mean, they'll go under the sink and look and find things that say poison and stick them in their mouth and suck on them. It's ridiculous. Anything to get high. And it's killing people, but I don't know. I'm horrible this way, because if they want to do that, if they really want to do that, and they die because of it, sorry, that's how my opinion. That's just tough luck, because that's stupid. That's just, I mean, in my opinion, if they're going to be that stupid, I don't know if we want them around.
Well, if they keep going that way, they won't be around. In fact, if they want to do it, they want to suck on fumes, go drive a truck.
Go suck on an exhaust pipe someplace. Any sort of exhaust pipe will probably do.
There you go. 646-721-9887 is the number to call. We've got plenty of lines open. Actually, we've got 50 of them to be precise, but
And by the way, we know that this number works because we're doing it. I'm calling on that number right now in order to make this program work at this point. So if you want to do that, call the number, 646-721-9887. Go ahead. Do it. Do it. I dare you.
Do it. Do it now. In fact, I got a quiz for anybody who wants to call in. There is no prize for this quiz because Cliff stumped me at the beginning of the program. Is how many people know what the Memorial Reflection Pool is? 646-721-9887 if you know the answer to that one. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. The Memorial Reflection Pool. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what it is. It's pretty. It's really pretty.
It is.
Yeah.
And I just put in $30 for it, too. But 646-721-9887 if you know the answer to that question. And you're just going to have to hang on to the program for a little bit to find out the answer. So I hate teases, but they're fun.
Okay.
So at the bottom of the hour, we'll go ahead and give you the answer for that one so you don't have to wait too long. But if you do know the answer, 646-721-9887. And Cliff, what do you want to get into next?
Well, I want to let's talk about poor Samsung. I mean, they've I swear to God, Apple has finally found a way to gain market share, and that they'll just put the other people out of business. They'll sue them until they're out of business. Now, of course, I don't think they're going to put Samsung out of business. I think Samsung's the bigger company, but Apple just won a $1 billion judgment against, it's over $1 billion, against Samsung because, I mean, of all things, one of the problems, one of the things that they got upset about was that the Samsung tablet has rounded corners, and so does Apple, and so it looks like an Apple. Well, what the hell, how are you going to make it say? Yeah, they're a little round square thing that has a picture in the middle of it. I mean, what the hell are you going to make it look like? That you're going to make a triangle out of it or something? Nobody's going to count. Nobody's going to carry that around. I mean, what do you do to make it different than the Apple? I mean, I don't know how they can possibly get away with that myself. I mean, I suppose you could make them a little squarer, but I mean,
if you want to take it to the extreme, how about the carpenter that first invented rounded corners? Maybe he's got a patent on it. Maybe he should be suing Apple.
Yeah, really. I swear. You know, the thing is, what do you do? I can understand the one of the things they mentioned was when the page comes to the end of the page or something, it automatically goes snap to the back at the top. That's a thing that Apple does, and Samsung was doing it too. Okay, that I could say that was an Apple invention. But rounded corners on the actual device itself is not an Apple convention, not an Apple invention. I mean, I've got rounded corners on my computer. I've got rounded corners on my monitor. I mean, Apple didn't invent them. I mean, Apple didn't even invent my monitor. I mean, I'm using an Acer monitor. Okay, I'll tell everybody. But it has rounded corners. I mean, it's square, but it's got rounded corners. And, you know, I just... And the thing that gets to me is they won the suit, and the judge or whoever it was gave them over $1 billion, but they gave them an out. They said that there is a possibility they could revisit this whole thing, and the judgment could be for up to $10 billion. They could sue Samsung for. This whole thing is just kind of, I think it's sort of ridiculous and. I you know, I don't have anything for Samsung. It's not even an American company, but and Apple sort of is. It started in America, at least. It's not an American company now. It doesn't do, I don't think, much of anything in America except sue people.
Well, okay, here's one. They both have flat screens. They both have touch screens.
That's true. But how are you going to operate them if you don't have that?
But who patented the flat screen, the touch screen?
Well, it wasn't Apple, I don't think.
So when, See, what I'm saying is that how extreme do you want to go? Now, granted, I know companies like, well, like Sony, for example, the color blue that they use in their logo is copyrighted or trademarked. You know, you can't use that color blue in your logo without getting in trouble. The shape like Oregon, the Oregon Ducks, for example, that O is copyrighted. So you can't use that O in your promotions or whatever, which you wouldn't know it looking around how many O's there are.
As a matter of fact, the Oregon O, they went and looked and specifically did that because they wanted to use Donald Duck. They wanted to use the Donald Duck logo and use that, but Disney sued them for that. So they had to go come up with some sort of a thing in that O that they could sort of call their own. So they did that. They were forced to do that because they were going to use the Donald Duck person. And, I mean, no, Donald Duck, Walt Disney isn't going to allow them to take it and use the Donald Duck. I think they should have let him, Donald Duck, because that's actually more publicity for Walt Disney, for God's sakes.
Yeah, but that's a copyrighted character. Now, granted, these, you know, back to Samsung and Apple, yeah, you know, they do look fairly similar, but, you know, people know an iPhone from an iPhone, but I guess they're afraid that other people are going to go, hey, this is kind of similar to an iPhone. Why should I pay the extra amount for an iPhone when I can get the Samsung for a little bit less money?
That's where they're making their mistake. That's the thing that's going to get them. They're going to make this money on this huge lawsuit, and they're going to make their forcing Samsung to do something different. If they would simply spend that money on lowering their price and make it competitive, then they might make their money legitimately. I mean, they're not competitive. They never have been competitive. And that's what Samsung was doing. And, of course, this is not just Samsung. There's several people, anybody using the system and that are going to get in trouble because they've got to stop doing it. Apple has several different lawsuits going all at the same time. This is just the first one they've won.
Well, and some companies, which some companies learn, some don't, just like, well, of course, people that in this generation probably never heard of this word, beta, which does not mean program. But when VCRs, yes, remember VCRs, you know, tape, first came out, you had the choice between Beta and Betamax and VHS. Betamax, which was developed and licensed by Sony, had a very tight hold on who they would license the technology to. In fact, they wouldn't do it to anybody. They had their own brand. Well, VHS, which licensed it to Panasonic and some of the others, Motorola, became the dominant in the industry because the customers had a choice. It brought the price of the product down. And Betamax, even though technically it was a better quality, but because Sony hung such a tight rein on it, it died. Same thing with their more recently, probably about 10 years back, Sony came up with or tried to market out for these robotic dogs and came up with three generations on it. And they were selling like hotcakes. In fact, as fast as they put them out, they were sold. Then people, of course, figured out how to hack them and were writing their own applications for them. And Sony got furious about that. And these groups that were buying these things, you know, said, hey, look, we bought this thing. It's ours. You know, but Sony was threatening to sue and everything. And they took something that was a killer market and, you know, they're not doing it anymore.
Well, Sony acknowledges their mistake with the Beta and the VHS war, let me tell you. But there was a little more to that because, see, Sony wanted to completely eliminate Beta and have it go over to 8mm because they were into the 8mm really big. But they completely missed that entirely because I don't know what there was, but people didn't want the 8mm tapes. They were smaller, they looked just as good, and the quality was good, but people didn't want them for some reason or other. There was something about them that they didn't want. It could have been just Sony, but Sony made a big mistake there, let me tell you, and they acknowledged that fact that they made a big mistake there. Of course, they were well on their way towards CDs and DVDs at that particular time, so maybe they didn't make a big mistake.
Well, I think they made a big mistake in closing the plant down in Springfield, which caused me to go into other employment.
They've made some major mistakes in their time, let me tell you. They're a huge company, and they have a whole lot of, how do I want to put this, they have a whole lot of management, a lot of people managing for Sony, and they aren't very stringent on how they control their managers. And some of their managers can make some big mistakes, and Sony has to live with them.
Well, it's also that same thing about they're a big company, and so the attitude, especially upper management, is that they have deep pockets. Well, especially in this economy, you can't go on that analogy. You got to stay up with it and pick your battles. I mean, just like when Napster came out, Sony fought that like crazy, and... But the companies that are thriving are the ones that kind of go, hey, there's a market for this. AT&T did that when the Internet first came out in dial-up. They were complaining that their circuits were being overloaded and were starting to put limitations or upcharge or do whatever. Another company came in and says, hey, if you're having that problem with such a demand, instead of complaining about it, take advantage of it.
Yeah. By the way, you were asking about flat screens and who invented them?
Yes.
Yes. So, Samsung is the largest maker of flat screens and flat screen televisions in the world. And I don't know if they invented them or not, but they're the largest maker of them. And so for televisions and computers and smartphones and everything, they've got it. So
there you go. We just opened up a can of worms. I could just see them. The lawyers rushing into the courtroom going, we want an appeal. Apple's actually stolen our patent for having the screens.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
Thanks to this little internet radio station.
Really?
Which, by the way, 646-721-9887, do you know the answer to the Memorial Reflection Poll and what it is? Give us a call, 646-721-9887. And because whatever it is, we're spending $34 million for a makeover for it. And we'll give you the answer here very shortly.
Samsung, by the way, as of June 30th, has cash assets of $15.5 trillion. They could afford to drop a little out of their pocket and I could pick it up. They would never
don't
even know.
Yeah, don't say that too loud or somebody else will be drooling over it too. And the big O who hates millionaires and billionaires, they should pay their fair share. Yeah.
Well,
we should take our share of vacations too.
They're not an American company, so he has to play hell getting to pay their share. He's going to have to go overseas to get them to do it.
Yeah, just like the exit tax that they want to put on when that billionaire from Facebook decided to leave the country so he didn't have to pay taxes. And boy, the people up there in Washington were really upset because they were just looking at all that money going out the window.
Well, that billionaire from Facebook is kind of wishing he'd done things differently, I think, because he's losing a lot of money right now.
Yeah. Like, sorry, not everybody, especially when they switched Facebook over to the timeline thing, not everybody's too thrilled about that. But we weren't given a choice.
Well, we're also getting, it's far enough into the game that there are other programs on the Internet that are similar to it. I just found this one called, what is it, Pinnitel or something? Pinnit. It's a place where you can go and pin up pictures that you enjoy, and it's getting a really big place, big organization, and be kind of fun to. I went there and I didn't see anything there that I liked, but it's still a big thing.
Well, and Google Plus is developing a really huge social network too. In fact, it's going gangbusters.
Yeah, it's fourth on the list or something like that. I don't know what. But Pinterest is
Pinterest.
Pinterest, yeah. is what
something
I'm talking
like that.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's neat and it's interesting to go to, but I don't know. I find it fun to visit it. I wouldn't want to join. I can't think of anything I'd want to put on there, but I do find it's interesting to read and read about the things that are on there already, because people are just in droves are putting things on there. So they have a whole thing there about cooking, and they have some neat things to do there. I figured I learned a new way to make cookies, and I'm up for that.
Yeah, even dancing dog cookies. Well, what I hate about those social networks is that to update them, you have to have a life.
Well, see, that's why I don't keep Twitter up to date. To do that, you've got to put something on there every day. I don't have time every day to go in and click on there and tell Twitter that I just stepped in the room, or I just left the room, or I just had breakfast, or whatever. There's nothing of interest about that everybody would want to know. I don't have anything that interesting in my life that they want to know about that.
Yeah. And on my side, I got up. I went to work. I drove a truck. I got home. We did a radio show, which is gaining lots of popularity, by the way. And thank you, by the way, since we're doing more than 500 listens per week.
Yeah,
Between 500 and 1,000 listens per week. So thank you for tuning in and trying us out. And we hope that you'll keep coming back and trying for more. And again, too, send us email, talk@krbradio.com. And see how I'm just sliding in here with this?
More to the point, give us a call at 646-721-9887, and you too can be on the radio, and you can then be a part of our experience and your experience. Our experience can be your experience.
And that way we can all get along and be, yes, 646-721-9887. Do you want to touch on the wildfire or the storm?
I don't really care. I just let's talk about the storm and the fact that we can go from the storm into the Republican National Convention, because they're kind of sharing each other. Everybody at the convention center was worried because it started today. Supposedly, the Republican National Convention started today, and it didn't start today because of the storm that was coming. Now, Isaac was Isaac. They can tell where it is and what it is and what it's going to do almost. I mean, they get an idea of what it's going to do, and then it changes its mind. And it's this particular instance, it was going to go right up the right-hand side, which I guess is east of Florida. It was going to go up the east side, it's east coast of Florida. But as it got to Florida, it changed its mind and decided to go west. And go west, young man, and it did, and it missed Florida. It went so west that it's going clear over and now going up the middle of the Gulf Coast, and it's going to hit again in New Orleans. Poor New Orleans is going to get hit again. Now, this it's not going to be a storm like the original one was years ago that wiped so many things out, because it's only one, category one at the worst, possibly a category two, and it's never been higher than that. Now, the other storm started out at 5, went up to 5 before it hit the coast there, and it was down at like 4, I guess, by the time it hit the coast, but it was huge. I'd be interested. I've been looking all over the place to see what's happening. Of course, I can't really see it yet because it's not happened yet, but I'm really looking forward to seeing how these levees and these dikes and these things that they've been rebuilding and building and so on are going to hold. I know they've spent a lot of money on them. It'll be interesting to find out how well they're going to hold against this particular storm when it comes in and hits. So basically, Isaac is kind of an interesting thing. It's a big storm, Category 2 at the best, at the worst, let's put it that way, I guess, at its best. But so far, it's just a Category 1, and we don't have to worry about it. So it'll be interesting to see what it's basically going to hit, I guess, Tuesday. I mean, it's hitting New Orleans at the moment, and all of these people, the governors of the states are declaring states of emergency already, and I don't blame them a bit because they don't want to wait like they have before and get in there too late. So it's a good thing that they're declaring these emergencies right away so that they can know what they're going to do. And you know, one thing...
Thank you, meteorologist Cliff. I have a question for you, though.
Okay.
How does a storm change its mind? I mean, does it kind of come up and go, let's see, do I want to go right? No. Hey, I've been in New Orleans last year. I heard that would be good. So I think maybe I'll go over here.
Now, do you think out loud when you change your mind? You don't think out loud, so it's certainly not going to think out loud, and you're never going to know an answer to that. See?
Well, yeah, there. See, if I didn't think that, then it would have just been 30 seconds of dead air.
Well, what I want to do, though, before we have 30 seconds of dead air, is get you to think twice. Okay, when you're getting in the middle of this storm and the power goes out, an awful lot of people are now buying generators, and they're using generators. They're starting these generators, and that way they can keep things going, and they can keep the freezers and things going in their home and all that sort of thing. But be smart. I mean, a generator is not to be used indoors. A lot of people think, well, hell, I'll just use it indoors. It's just a little generator. I'll put it in there, and then I'll plug things into it. And then they sit there and they die of asphyxiation. But get the generator outside and running a cord or something, because you got to have that generator. I don't care, even if you've got all your windows open and your doors open and everything, which you're probably not going to have in a case of a storm, because then you may as well invite the storm in. But if you're going to have use a generator, use it outside and run a cord in. That's not that difficult to do, and it's not that difficult to keep in touch with the internet. And it doesn't hurt you that much to go out and fill the gas tank if you need to do that while it's running outside. Outside, I'll tell you. Because carbon monoxide is invisible. It's odorless. It's tasteless. You don't know it's there. And it can get to you real fast. So be careful, I tell you. Just use your head a little bit, a little tiny bit.
Take my battery in the house with me because I get lonely.
Well, you have a generator there too, so you're familiar with this even more, but yours is actually outside of the home, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of, they were really smart when they installed it. They it's outside under the bed.
Under the bed?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You've got to be kidding. I mean, okay. Let's hope nothing. There's no rust or anything like that underneath there.
No, that's what. Well, it's a small place. 646-721-9887.
Yeah. Anyway, I would like to have a generator. I didn't buy a generator, but then I've had a couple of outages of power, but they've not been long enough to worry about, and there were not any of the outages were not because of a storm. So I guess mine are because of squirrels going up and playing around and crossing across the power lines and blowing a circuit board. So
I'll do that. Well, yeah. shall we go ahead and tell them the answer to the quiz?
Sure.
Okay. The answer to what is a memorial reflection pool and why are we spending $34 million on it is the Lincoln Memorial Reflection Pool, and apparently it hadn't been touched for quite a long time, and so they decided to make some changes to the 90-year-old pool, which has been leaking, sinking, and... So they completely redone it, and of course, who knows what happened to the pennies that people throw in the pool.
You get too carried away with that. Remember, This is a big, big, big pool, and it had a lot of ducks and things that have been swimming around in there. And these ducks, while they're in there, they don't care about where they go to the bathroom. And so consequently got like a foot of duck doo-doo at the bottom of the pool that's been collected over the years. And so you wouldn't want to go in after those pennies anyway.
That's right. And they said that this time the water would be filtered and constantly circulated. And in fact, according to Bob Vogel, who's the National Mall and Memorial Park Superintendent, says, we think the water quality is going to be much better. It's going to be a much better environment, and they are going to have it completely redone so it would be more handicapped accessible to sidewalks, new lighting, enhanced security. And of course, it goes along with Obama. We're not, hopefully, going to have a huge amount of algae as we've had in the past. So sorry, Mr. O, your eyes, well, at least we know where he got the idea for the new energy source of algae, looking right across the memorial reflection pool, which is, by the way, in front of the Washington Monument.
Very upset about this whole thing because, and you know, I think it's okay to fix the pool and to clean it up and to make it better, and that's fine, but not now. We have a lot of places we can spend our money. We have a lot of things we can spend our money. We have a lot of $34 million. Think of how many jobs that could create for somebody. It did create some in this particular instance, but this is not necessarily where we needed to spend it. We could do this 5 years down the
road. Wait a minute. You're making this argument after reaming me every time I bring up all the money that they spend for art? $34 million is a drop in the bucket, to quote you.
That's okay. We can do it later. We can do it later. We don't need to do it now. If it's already been done, that's fine. It's fine to have art, some kind of art. But it's not something that needed to be done right now. We didn't need to spend that $34 million right now. We could have spent it on something more worthwhile than fixing the reflecting pool. For that matter, we could just drain the damn reflecting pool for 2 years until somebody cleaned it out. And, you know, we could ask for volunteers. Somebody would probably want that stuff at the bottom of the pool. I don't know.
Drain it out, give it a glossy finish. But no, that you're making my point that I've made all this time about art. Is art, when you have a limited budget and you got to decide whether to fix the potholes or go spend millions of dollars for an art project, the art can wait. And now you're agreeing with me. You're making my point.
Yes, I am. I am this time. Okay. I'm making your point this time, if you want to call out your point.
I'm coming, Elizabeth.
Well, anyway, I just think it's not the right time.
Elizabeth agrees with me.
It's just not the right time to do that, to spend that money on that. I don't know what money you're talking about spending on art, and we are doing that still. I know that we're still spending money on art, and it doesn't need to be happening right now. That's why, see, Mr. Obama's priorities are really warped. He's not got them in the proper perspective. And so we've got to get somebody in there that does have a little more knowledge of how to perspective and how to put things in perspective. You know, if you think about it, and you think about what experience Obama has brought to this position of president, and then what experience Romney could bring to the position of president. Romney has run small businesses. He's run big businesses. He's run the Olympics. He's run a state. Obama hasn't done any of those until now, and so far, even to this point, he's not done any of them successfully, none of them. And he's not run successfully. We just went another $1 billion in debt. We are now $4 billion that he has put in debt just on his watch. That's $4 billion. Now, we were a lot more in debt than that, but when you think about it, when George Bush ran us into debt, we had a little bit of a problem there. We had a tremendous amount of money was expended on home security and that sort of thing, because we had a whole country that was under siege. And Obama has not had that. He has had no problem. He has had no problems that weren't his own making, let's put it that way. So we've got to change, make a big change here. I'm speechless because I just can't imagine us continuing with four more years of Obamaism.
Well, and it's not just Obama, you know, getting back into the $34 million. It's just the typical thing of the government, the mentality of it. I mean, like even in Portland, for example, I forget the name of the bridge. I think it's the Selwood Bridge they're thinking about putting up to kind of help traffic going between Oregon and Washington. But yet they're going to make it so that bikes, trains, planes and automobiles, well, no automobiles, sorry, but buses and trains and bikes.
I haven't seen that, but that seems they're going to put another bridge up, including the one we've got. We're not going to replace the one we've got.
I'm not too familiar with the project to be honest with you, but they're spending a lot. My point is they're spending a lot of money. You know, they need more. They need better roads. They need bridges for car traffic, but instead they're going to spend the money for bicycles, for buses, for light rail. It's like, okay, fine. Because again, they want everybody out of their cars is what they're focusing on. But again, you know, it's called using your money wisely. You know, they're even talking about putting up tolls. The economy's hard enough as it is, and if you're paying, say, $5 a day in tolls, and you're going to work, it's $25 a week, you know, $100 a month, added to your commute in addition to what's gas price now, $4.05 a gallon?
Yeah, yeah. It's ridiculous. They can save some money, though, because you realize that Portland, Oregon is probably the arguable leader in food carts. They've had, last year alone, they had 70 or 700 food carts licensed last year in Portland, Oregon. So you don't have to go out of your way to go to lunch. You can just step out your front door and lunch will come to you, more or less. So but this really creates another problem, by the way, food carts, because food carts, you've got to have a way to dispense this food, whether you want to put it in some sort of a container, some sort of what kind of container, any kind of container. They've come up with a new kind of container for food carts, and we're talking about 60,000 containers a month in food carts that the food carts themselves disperse in Portland alone. So 60,000 of them. They've got a new kind of container, which I think is kind of a neat idea. It's a thing that you can eat your food, and then you take it and drop it off at a recyclable place, a place to recycle it, and then they'll have those around, I suppose. And when you drop it off, it gives you like a coin. Not a dime or anything like that, but a regular, just a coin. And what you can do is you can go back when you're ready to eat again, you give them that coin, and it doesn't cost you anything for this container. So you can reuse and reuse and reuse. And what the according to the people, the Portland people, the health code, they can clean these things and make them absolutely usable again without bothering anybody or hurting anybody or anything like that. So I think this is a neat idea. It's made out of a blue tinted number 5 plastic, and it's a more durable version of the standard takeout clamshell, basically. So I think this is a great idea. And this is something, it's only in Portland that I know of. So,
but is it cost effective? Just like when they came up with the idea of getting rid of plastic bags after they got us convinced to go with plastic bags to save a tree, because, you know, plastic is a byproduct of oil. And so now they want you to use these reusable cloth bags, which they're finding out now that because most cloth bags don't wind up going in the wash, that people, especially the clerks, are getting sick off of, because, you know, food, different types of foods gets mixed in. Like you may have bought fish the week before or chicken, and now you're using it for something else. And so you got salmonella developed or starting in there. You know, the clerks have to fill these bags, so they're getting all the garbage from everybody else. And so health-wise, it hasn't exactly been that good of an idea.
Then we should do this with the plastic bags. We should say, okay, the plastic bag should be made of a more durable product. You can make them out of plastic if you want to, but it can be cleaned. And basically, you pay for one. If you bring it back and you turn it in next time to be cleaned, then you get a free use of another one. And you can, we've got things that we can come up with ideas like this and that work and make it safe for everybody. But we go off half-cocked and half-baked and try to make it simple and easy, and it's not simple. You got to think this out before you do things like this.
Exactly. That's like ethanol. You know, sound like a good idea, you know, reduce oil consumption, and ethanol is a little bit cleaner, but look how it affected the food crops worldwide.
Well, that's because they went off half-cocked, because ethanol was not supposed to be made out of corn. And there are a lot of things that ethanol can be made out of other than corn that wouldn't bother, would it create a whole new industry. But we're making it out of corn, and that's absurd, because corn is a food, and we're just now replacing it with from one thing to another, and we now then can't keep up with the production of corn as much as we should. So consequently, the cost is going to rise. But ethanol should be, I don't know if I want to make it a law that you can't make it out of corn, but there's got to be a way you can make it out of other things. And the thing that I want to see happen right now, I'm a little upset because we've got the oil industry is in terrible shape, because we got this storm going in there. They've shut down hundreds and hundreds of oil wells that are out in the ocean that the different companies have got, and it's going to raise the price of gasoline, supposedly. Well, we don't need to be doing this. We could, if we wanted to use ethanol as an alternative of fuel, and it doesn't need to be, because ethanol, you can burn ethanol in your car almost exclusively, and it doesn't cost you anything or hardly anything at all to change your car. And a lot of cars, you don't have to spend any money at all. But ethanol is something that could be used and could be made anywhere, because you can make ethanol safely. It doesn't going to explode. It's amazing how you can do this. And we could make these little ethanol refineries all over, and you can have all these people that you wouldn't have thousands and thousands and thousands of them when there's a storm, go in and put them out of business for a while. And if a storm is bad enough, it may have even destroyed them. You don't know. Let's not have these big clumps of product and manufacturing. Let's do it in small little bits so that we have it spread out along the country, so we don't put everything in one basket.
Wow, that's called thinking outside the box.
Yeah, maybe it is. It's about time we started doing that. And maybe it's about time we put somebody in office who can do that.
Well, and that's something we definitely need to do for more reasons than just that, you know, in order to save our country, you know. But again, it's just like I've said many a time, it shows just how, as they say, one man can make a difference. Well, one administration can make a huge difference, and Cliff is right. He tried. He gave it his best shot. But unfortunately, he's not experienced enough as far as the job market really is to get the country going back on the right track again. But the fact, our country, believe it or not, is based on tradition, and part of our tradition is the Constitution. And our Constitution has been slapped in the face more this administration than any other administration that I can remember. In fact, according to the stats on our KRBNradio.com website, the links that we have there to the Constitution have been one of the highest reference links that we have.
Yeah, it's amazing, because it's a major increase. I mean, you look at these things in a bar code, and and you've got almost twice as many people reading the Constitution as any other page. And they and they spend a longer time. And of course, the Constitution is long; it's not a short thing that you can just browse through. But if you're going to sit there and read it, it's going to take some time. But it's worth your time because it's amazing. These people thought and thought. I mean, they must have. Before they put this thing together for it to last this long and still be current, more or less, than it is right, it has been all along. I don't know. I'm amazed when I read the Constitution. It's outlandish that somebody could think that way.
Well, I mean, think about it. Yeah, they built it based on the experiences that they had in the colonies and from England. But when you think about it, if it wasn't for the Constitution, all these people that for whatever reason, whatever their personal gain is, like wanting to get rid of the Second Amendment, you know, your right to bear arms and limit it, more and more gun controls, which I still believe is gun control is one of the reasons why we really do still have the freedoms that we have. If we didn't have the Constitution, we would not be doing a program like this because the state or the government would not allow it. Just look at the other countries that don't have a constitution like we have, how limited they are and how much censorship there is. I mean, we do have censorship here. It is slowly creeping in more and more into our lives. But again, the Constitution stops the government from gaining too much power, but that's only if the three branches work and do what they're really supposed to do. And we've seen some examples recently, like with the Obamacare, of how the Constitution, they're not following the Constitution and the implications that Obamacare is going to have on us, not just in health care, but in the other ways it's going to affect us too, especially in the next couple of years.
Well, you know, I can see that the Constitution is definitely, you need to read it, you need to follow it, and you need to think about it. But back to the gun control that you started off with, I'm not sure if, you know, I have differing thoughts about this. We are the only country that allows its citizens to carry guns. I think we're the only country. And we're also the only country. We have almost 100% more deaths by guns than any other country in the world. So is it good or bad that we're allowing the people to carry guns? Perhaps we shouldn't allow the people to carry guns. Of course, when you think about it now, is it possible, is it even possible to take that freedom away from us? Because you can't make these people go away. People are going to have guns. This is what I want to call it. It's a way of life in this country. And so that's the way people think. Because we're getting almost every day now somebody shooting somebody, and of course it's part of it's because I know we do have more, a better way of reporting and a better way of finding out about it, but it is true. We just had another shooting today of a couple of people in a school. Almost every day now we're finding somebody who's shooting somebody in a theater or in a school or hundreds of people at a time. Something's wrong. What can we do?
Ask yourself this, is that the way things are right now, like say you're a criminal and you're going to hold up somebody, for example, you know the chances are in this country that they are not going to be armed. So it makes, it gives you that power that, you know, you can go ahead and do this and know that they can't retaliate. Now, if somebody's If somebody's carrying a weapon and carrying a weapon is common ground, you may think twice about that. Same thing like that shooting in the theater. Yeah, he came in heavily armed, but what if half the people in there had weapons? I mean, sure, it'd be a heck of a shootout, but how many people would have actually have survived it? Same thing with the school shootings. You know, there's been cases where go ahead.
The thing with the school shootings and with the theater shooting, these are not to steal something. These are not to get money to eat with or anything else. This is just senseless shootings. I mean, The guy went into the theater. He went in the theater by the front door, by the way. He was not armed when he went into the theater. He left the theater, went out the back door, and went to his truck and got the weapons and came back. And that's so he was you weren't even aware of that. He didn't have anything that would indicate to, and he stepped in the door and behind the screen and started shooting. And yeah. But this was these people shooting in schools and all these places. It's just senseless shooting. It means nothing. I mean, what are we doing? What is wrong with our society that this is happening over and over and over again?
Well, I think part of it is, I hate to kind of push police states and stuff like that, but take Eugene, for example. Eugene, per capita, has the highest number of car thefts. But also Eugene has been Linn County Sheriff's budget has got down to where they barely have any patrols. They've actually come out and said now that if you have a burglary, we'll just take a report over the phone. We won't come out. Both Eugene Police and Linn County Sheriff's will not respond to alarm systems. You have to have an independent security company run out there to go investigate before they'll send an officer out there, and that's because of budget cuts and false alarms. Although, you know, a good alarm system, you don't have that many false alarms, but still budget cuts. And they come out and they talk about this in the paper. And so, obviously, you know, the criminal wants to make a big buck, and there's huge dollars in stripping cars down. You know, Eugene is primed for that. I mean, especially the way the economy is, you know, crime goes up.
Well, now, in this particular instance that you're speaking of, you're right. This institute has to do with our economy and what it's doing to our society, and that is true. So by fixing the economy and by fixing the budget and making jobs available and that sort of thing, that will slowly but surely fix itself. But that doesn't take into consideration these totally senseless shootings. There is no possible, I mean, we're having more and more of these senseless shootings. We're leaving people, we're not delving into people's ideas and thoughts enough. We're leaving people in the lurch. I mean, people that are mentally not stable. And why are they not stable? Maybe there's something in our society with everybody being so upset about the economy. Maybe that's just upsetting our society. Maybe it's what's making our society unstable. I don't know. But there's got to be a logical answer to this. And there's got to be a way to fix it because it's skyrocketing.
Well, maybe it's the same mentality as when a kid would go out with his BB gun and just shoot birds. You know, if the birds could shoot back, he'd probably think twice about doing it.
Okay, I have to. I don't know what to say about that because I was one who used to shoot birds. We went to the cemetery and would shoot birds or shoot at birds. We very seldom hit one, but that was another story entirely. I was the one who did that. So, but I would never dream of shooting a person, regardless of whether the person could shoot back at me or not. That's not something I would do. In fact, I don't know why birds were okay on my list, but no other animal would. I wouldn't shoot a rabbit or a cow or a bull or a steer or a fox, but I didn't mind shooting birds for some reason.
Well, a fox or some of the other animals you listed, if you missed, they can come back on you and attack you. You know, but why go out and just shoot birds? What do they do to you? You know, they can't defend themselves.
Well,
I mean, they can do a scraping run and make it messy.
Yeah. I've had the birds dive down after me. Didn't do anything. I got there. But I've had that happen before. So they can do something, I guess. But anyway, our society has a problem right now. Right now it does. And we've got to figure out what it is and what to do about it, I think. Because we're having more and more of these things as we go. I've been seeing more.
I would say that the best fix for it is, like you were talking about earlier, that we agreed upon as far as, you know, the priorities. We can, if we really, as a country, because we have a habit of this, of, as a country, of pulling together in hard times. Although lately, I'm really wondering about that because we've become such a bubble wrap society. But if our governments, our leaders, would focus on the economy, focus on jobs, instead of, I mean, I'm so tired of hearing that we need to raise taxes on millionaires and billionaires so they pay their fair share. It's like, you know, I don't care about the millionaires and billionaires. You know, quit picking on them, because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have these big corporations. You know, we need to focus more on – go ahead.
And you can't raise taxes enough to fix our problem. They can't do that. That is not the answer. Raising taxes is not the answer. I'm sorry, go ahead. Hello? Did we lose each other? Okay, I don't know if we've lost Robin or something.
No, I'm back. It's kind of interesting. It happened right on the hour. It's almost like Skype has a time limit now.
Okay.
That happened to both of us last week. You know, I lost Skype, hung up on me, and then 5 minutes later, it hung up on Cliff.
Well, we'll see what it does. I'll watch it. Anyway.
Yeah. But what was I saying? Something very important.
Yes. Well, we're just trying to figure out here what's wrong with our society, and maybe it is, maybe the whole thing will be fixed if we got our new president and changed our economy and turned it around, because I'm sure a lot of this will change when everybody has a job. Right now, so many people don't have a job, and it weighs on your mind when you don't have a job. I'm sure of it. And so consequently, when that's fixed and when we have all the people put back to work, or as many of them as want to go back to work, I'm sure there are some people that don't want to go back to work, but that'll probably change a lot of it.
Well, that's what I was saying, is that if we really wanted to fix the problem, you know, if we just took the problem seriously, you know, from the top down, we could fix this. And that's what I was saying about the millionaires and billionaires is, okay, so, I mean, I know the government is desperate for money, but where does that money go? How does that money help you and me? How does it help get the economy together? You know, they've already tried the stimulus package, which failed horribly. And not that the idea was really bad, you know, about giving things a boost. It's just how it was spent.
Well, it's because $34 million of the stimulus is spent fixing the reflecting pool.
Exactly. How's that? Well, yeah, it'll create a short-term job for the people in the construction industry. Doesn't help a lot of other people. And even then, it's only a temporary job.
This is not a short-term fix. This is not a temporary job fix. We want to fix it permanently. And so you don't do that way. You come up... And that's why I'm saying you can't tax your way out of this. You've got to leave the taxes alone and allow people to go out and make jobs. People who have the money go out to build things. And there's so many other things that go along with this. It's not just the idea of taxes that is a problem. You've got to worry about regulations and rules and things that limit how much you can do or limit how long you can do it for. And so many of these things have got to be changed, and that's the job that Romney is going to have when he steps in office. It's a big job. I know it is, but it's a job that Obama doesn't understand. He wants us on welfare. He wants to be the one who hands out the money. He wants to change the entire complex idea of how the United States works. And I'm realizing this more and more as we go along, what he wants to do and what he wants the world to be like in Obama land, in Obama's mind. And it ain't what I want the world to be like. So we've got to change. That's how we register our opinion. That's how we register our differences, is by electing the proper person, electing someone that is more inclined to believe things the way I believe them or you believe them. So that's what we're looking for, a new president.
Well, and also kind of go along that same line is about building jobs and stuff and the regulations. I got an email today. They were talking about something very interesting. I didn't realize this, that they're talking about banning V8 engines because of the new CARB regulations.
Okay. So that means all of us old cars are going to have to replace them?
Well, that means that the new cars, the V8 won't be available. You could get a V6, and then after a while, probably the V6 won't be available. And, they got the technology now. You still got some power, but it gets back down to the consumer choice. I mean, with the fuel injection and the computers and stuff, you can still get the power and still have a clean output. But the regulations are, again, taking away customer choice or consumer choice again.
Again, I feel it's probably a moot point because they're going to be electric before long.
Well, who knows about that?
I mean, that's the direction I feel that the automobile industry is going, is electric. How long it's going to take us to get there, because we're going to have to get there through hybrids first. But as soon as, I mean, we've got to make some major inroads in batteries. And so that's what I think we're waiting for.
Well, and here's the thing about a hybrid. Okay. For those of us that are old enough to remember when they switched over from carbureted cars to computer-controlled vehicles, a lot of mechanics didn't know how to fix them. You know, you got these cars that are becoming really complicated, and some overly complicated, in my opinion, that, as Scotty from Star Trek would say, you know, the more complicated they make the plumbing, the easier it is to plug up the works. Well, people like me, I buy a car and I keep it for a long time. In fact, my little car, which is a 84 Chevy Celebrity, you can't buy tires for it anymore. So what's going to happen to these cars, these hybrid cars, you know, after 10 years? They need batteries and things start breaking down. They're going to become a throwaway vehicle because it'll be too expensive to repair. And then now they're going to wind up in the landfills, in the recycles. You know, you got all the precious metals it takes to even make them.
Well, I've got an answer to that, of course. That's you should make your hybrid cars at this particular point so that later they can be converted to total electric. And once you've got it converted to total electric, your computers and all this sort of thing, everything is going to be significantly less. You're going to have less moving parts. It's going to be a significant change in how your car operates and what you're going to be able to do to it. It's going to be one of these systems where you don't repair anything. You just simply replace it. You replace the battery. You replace the motors. Of course, are going to be part of the wheels. And it's going to make a huge difference when we go to battery operated things. But we need to change in the middle here. When we're building these hybrids, we need to be able to adjust our thoughts and make them so that when the change is over to all electric, the hybrid cars can be changed to all electric with very little difficulty, so that you don't have to throw them away. You don't have to have all that loss and all that expense that was no good. And we could make cars that last a lot longer than they do, I'm sure, but we've got to get rid of this idea of disposable cars and make them that are going to last. And you can make them so that they're adaptable, so they can go along with the whatever works at the moment, and it saves some money that way.
Okay, but you know, again, looking at the big picture, in fact, they've actually been experimenting with this in Oregon and in some other states. All right, so you know, it sounds on the surface, hey, great, I'm going to have this electric car. All I got to do is plug it into my house, and I can drive, you know, for however long my charge is, and that's all it's going to cost me. Well, then you have the thing about, okay, because you're not buying gas, you're not paying for road tax. Where does the road tax come into? Well, you think it'd be just as simple as, oh, I just got to report my odometer readings at the beginning and the end of the year. No, that'd be too easy. So what they're talking about doing, and for all vehicles, is to have a per-mile tax collected by a GPS system that is installed in your vehicle that would be a variable amount depending on the time of day and the road congestion. So you may go to work, say, at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it may cost you, say, half a cent a mile to get to work, but then let's say you come home at 5 o'clock during rush hour, it may cost you 2 or 3 cents per mile. And under this system that they're proposing, if you have a hybrid or actually any other vehicle that uses the system, when you go to the pump to fill up, that's when it will bill you. If you have a full electric vehicle, you'll get a bill at the end of the month to collect the taxes.
I think the idea of having the taxes depending on GPS and all this mileage thing, it's going to depend on how much electricity you use. So it's just going to be a tax on electricity. It's going to be an added charge for the electricity itself. So it's going to be the electric companies that are going to be paying this charge to the different states and how much it's going to be per state. So it's going to make a difference in your light bill. It's not going to make a difference in, this business of GPS and all that, that's complicated. That's difficult. That's, how are you going to do that? So it's all going to be a model of how much electricity you use.
That system is already in place in Oregon.
Is it?
It's just waiting for the green light to go, yes.
The GPS system, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm trying to find the article now for that. But
I know we've got a lot of the, excuse me, we've got a lot of the charging stations that are already there, and most of them, a lot of them are actually free, but sooner or later, they're going to be different. They're going to be putting coins in or putting in cards or something. And then, again, that could be a part of your, because you can know how much you've traveled by how much electricity you've used. And so if when you charge your car, however it be, when you charge your car, that mileage can be put on there as a tax.
Okay, here's a good example. This is from a website called The Triple Pundit. The state of Oregon introduced a bill which passed the House Transportation and Economic Development Committee on April 4th, which proposes to charge drivers of electric vehicles and plug-in vehicles 0.0143 cents per mile starting in 2014. And they say that's reasonable considering that Oregon's fuel tax is 30 cents per mile. Collected.
But if it's that much less, how are they going to make it go? I mean, they're not going to have enough money.
Well, you have to look at the administration's costs for all that as well. But yeah, if you think it's going to be a free ride just because you have an electric car,
Well, I don't see any reason why it should be a free ride, because electric cars are going to cost you less money in the first. So I don't mind paying a little bit there, but I don't know how much, because if you're talking about 0.00, whatever it is, percent per mile, and you're already paying 30 cents per mile for gas tax, somewhere you're going to have to make up that difference.
Yeah, and I'm still trying to find the article that talks about it, because it's actually they've actually done it in Oregon. They've gone past the pilot program.
Well, Oregon is doing some interesting things, because we're putting in the charging stations at a much higher rate than other people are doing. Because I've seen the charging stations. I've stopped at stores and the charging station's been there. And it's already there, so it's a good thing that we're doing it. We're attacking it head on, and we're not waiting for it to just all of a sudden hit us in the head with all this extreme cost and not thinking about it at all. You know, let's not bury our head in the sand like other states are, and let's get it out in the open and do something about it.
Okay, I found the article. This is actually on the State of Oregon's website, the DOT, and it's called Road User Fee Task Force. And this is where they're going to put the GPS system in your car. It's actually House Bill 3946. And basically what it does is that it charges you per mile based on the time of day, the amount of congestion, where you're at, and when you go to the fuel pumps, it is when it will talk to the fuel pump and tell you how much tax you owe for the miles in the area that you traveled. So instead of like the current system where you prepay it, you won't know, you know, basically how much you're going to pay.
Boy, they sure do try to make it difficult, don't they? I mean, they're measuring all those things instead of just a set fee. My God. I guess it can all be on the computer. But.
Well, when asked one of the facts, FAQ questions in here is, why can't a simple car odometer be used to calculate mileage driven since all cars already have them? The answer is that the current vehicle odometers are not able to turn off when a driver travels outside of Oregon. So that's the thing to consider, too, is that if you're going from state to state to state, you know, this becomes commonplace, you could be driving into Washington, let's say, you know, going over the bridge from Oregon to Washington, and now you're getting charged more per mile. You know, depending on again where you're going.
Well, this
and like I say, also
they've made this so this is going to be extremely difficult to put into place because they've got to have an absolute computer in every car. Then,
well, it basically it's via communications. Like for example, congestion pricing. They recommend congestion pricing as an option for certain geographical regions where traffic congestion is prevalent. If Oregon has a mileage fee in place, the fee rate could be adjusted for congestion pricing, again, depending on the time of day, or also what's called area pricing. They also can include in this bill as well as instead of having toll booths, you know, you go over a bridge and, you know, where it might cost you a $5 toll, well, they automatically will calculate that in. So, again, when you go and recharge or refill or fuel up, that's when you'll get billed for it.
That's scary because you don't know what you're going to end up paying for. And then this congestion thing, I don't understand that. But congestion doesn't make any difference how far you go, because just because it's congested, you know, with electricity, when you're sitting on the ground, on the highway, not going anywhere, which would indicate a congested area, it's not costing you anything because you aren't using electricity unless you're going someplace. So I don't see any logic behind that congestion.
Well, the idea is that, remember, they want you out of your vehicles. And so if they charge you more for traveling in an area that's congested, the logic behind it is that you're not going to go in that area or you're not going to drive your car because you don't want to pay more. So maybe you'll use public transit. Well, public transit doesn't work for all cases, especially
in fact,
if you're shopping for big items.
Public transit doesn't work very often at all, and Oregon is a good place to point to for that, because public transit, other than in Portland and maybe, well, the idea was I don't even think it works in Eugene, just Portland. Public transit is not an option; it's not an alternative. So until they get public transit to work and public transit to be a logical move. You can't expect people to use it.
Exactly. It has to be convenient and it has to be efficient. Like, for example, in Eugene, to go from Springfield to Eugene is a 30-minute drive by car.
Mm-hmm.
Even in worst-case conditions, you know, it's a 30-minute drive. To take the bus, you know, including the time, say, to walk from my house to the bus depot, you know, wherever the bus stop, to get on the train or to get on the bus, transfer, you know, from the different areas you have to transfer from, to get over to west side of Eugene is an hour and a half.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I think that's probably one of the most usable transit systems that there is. I lived in San Leandro. I had to walk a grand total of half a block to a bus depot, to a bus stop. And then from there on out, I had two changes. I had a change in downtown to get on a bus that went to San Francisco, and a bus that at San Francisco, it changed bus lines and to then to go where I wanted to go. So I found that possibly the most relaxing ride there is. And because it was so convenient and because it was so easy and it didn't cost extra money, because the cost of your bridge toll fee, because it didn't include toll fees at that time and everything, it actually didn't cost me any more to take the bus and cost less than it would to drive. So I found that one useful. But that's the only place I've ever lived in my life where I actually used the bus, because it was an easy thing to do. So they've got a long ways to go here, or almost in any city in Oregon or Washington or Idaho or any of them, to make it useful, make it easy to do. And they've got a long ways to work on.
Exactly. And the cost that it takes to do it, like the EMX project in Eugene, for example. The first stretch that was put in between Franklin Boulevard and Springfield, which is a 14-mile stretch, which is supposed to knock 5 minutes off your commute time, cost over $15 million to build. And basically, because it was not just special lanes for the bus, but it was also designed with high-tech, you know, with reader boards, and designed so that these special buses, these accordion buses, which cost $1 million a piece because they're specially designed, like they can drive themselves buses. When you break it down, how is that cost effective?
Well, I'm sure
having, like, say, a smaller bus or the other accordion buses, which are $300,000.
I'm sure over a period of time that will be cost effective. I mean, I've sat right back with the same idea when I lived in San Francisco Bay Area. They started building the overhead rails and things like that for their mass transit system, and we thought that was absurd. In fact, there were a whole cities that opted out of that system and didn't spend the money to taxes or whatever, but it has become a very, very useful, and everybody uses. As a matter of fact, when they had the earthquake there, that the underground system through the tunnels and under the bay, that was the only way to get around because it didn't break, it didn't fall apart. They know how to build things at this particular point, so you have to think forward. You have to think ahead. Sometimes it doesn't seem logical, but at other times, after a while, it maybe does. And we've got to sit back and decide who's making those decisions. I mean, it's not just some guy sitting there saying, "I want to spend that much money." I mean, I'm sure that somewhere there's a whole lot of people who have sat down and spent a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of thought at what to do and how to do it and how much money to spend. So do you not have any confidence in those people that you have probably hired or elected to make these decisions?
Well, and speaking of that list you just mentioned about time, money, and effort, 646-721-9887, because we put a lot of time, money, and effort into this program, and we'd like your phone call, 646-721-9887. Again, if you happen to miss the program live, your emails are always welcome, talk@krbnradio.com. And you can also listen to this program on your cell phone, too, by dialing that number and pushing the number 1 if you wish to participate. But we have 5 minutes remaining in the program, speaking up, but there's still enough time for your phone calls. So give us a call, 646-721-9887. Do you like that lead-in?
That's very good, very good, very good. 646-721-9887. And I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. I want to go back to San Francisco now. I'm sitting here, but we've talked about BART so long. I want to go back there and work. And I sat lived in San Francisco. I was living there when it was an inconvenience, when they were building it, and it was a pain in the butt. I've not been there long enough to take advantage of using it now that it's finished. So, and now I could go back and, And I'd like to take advantage of that. That's now that I've lived through the trials and tribulations of it.
Well, on that, you're living in a little one-horse town, which used to be a one-horse town until the horse died.
Really, really. Well, it's true. I would very much like to live somewhere where I could use a rapid transit or of some kind, mass transit system, to do what I like to do. It's so limited as to what they do here. Our buses are so slow. In San Francisco, when I was down there, I could take off any time from work to leave to go to work. I mean, there was a bus that went in front of my house every 20 minutes, period. And so I didn't have to worry about when I got there. I didn't have to worry about missing the bus or anything else because there was going to be another one right away. So we don't have that around here. You miss the bus, and it may be an hour before you or two in the traffic time before you can get another one. If it's in the off time at night or something, it could be 3 or 4 hours before there's another one. And that's not acceptable as far as I'm concerned. Not if you expect me to use the transit system and not use my car. I mean, my car is more convenient.
Exactly. And safer, too, when you get right down to it.
It's safer?
Well, yeah. Because you're in your car. You can lock the doors versus having to sit out on the bus stop where you're exposed to whatever hooligan happens to come along.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I didn't even consider that, and I never have had a problem with that. I just don't, of course, I'm not a female, so I guess that is a difference in the way of thought. I've never considered being harassed sitting at a bus stop. Even in a big city where I was sitting in bus stops, I was never harassed. When we changed buses in San Francisco, the bus depot that I used there, for God's sakes, was huge. I mean, there must have been, in busy times, there would be 5,000 people in there, and nobody bothered me or anything else. And we also had food available, and it was just very convenient and very comfortable, for that matter. And it was much easier to sit there and read the paper while riding a bus than having to try to figure out how to drive up and down San Francisco streets or any of them that we're driving. And if I wasn't going to pay any more money either way, I would much rather take the easiest way through the problem, which was transit, mass transit.
Well, I mean, like you say, San Francisco, yeah, maybe... maybe it's better, but like Eugene, you know, even the experts say it's too small, but they're going to do it anyways.
Well, they've got to do it because it's not going to be too small forever. We are growing, and our economy is going to grow once we get it, put it back together, once we get the right person in office and with it, the right ideas and ways of doing things, then the economy is going to grow and things are going to, and the area is going to grow. Let's face it. There's going to become the time when Portland, clear down to Medford probably, is all going to be one big metropolis, and we're going to have to get it going. Like you were talking about, what we've got a possibility of a bus from Portland down to Eugene. That's something that they should be doing because that's going to be an important way, important part of transportation soon. So you got to think ahead for these things and then think a long ways ahead because this is not something that's going to happen tomorrow and it's just going to happen. We know what's going to happen. We can project and predict what's going to happen by trends and ways of things. And that's where we've got to decide who we're electing to office. That's where we've got to decide if we're electing someone that we can trust to make these decisions for us.
Yeah, and somebody that has the same thoughts that we did. By the way, we're as the clock is still messed up. By the way, is it 2 minutes? Depending on which clock you look at, but. Either way, we're running out of time, so again, appreciate you tuning in to the program. Hope you'll be back next week. If you have an idea for a topic or whatever, send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com, And better yet, give us a call next week, too, 646-721-9887. We'll be back again with more fun stuff to talk about. So hope you'll join us.
Have a good week. Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.